What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, joined by producer Jess for this 3 p.m. everyday segment of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Today, I am very excited to be joined by Amber Wallen, the executive director of the State Revenue Alliance. Folks, if you did not know, and we talked about it yesterday, but we'll talk about it again here today. Tomorrow, the tax fight, probably of a generation, is kicking off on Capitol Hill. Progressive groups are rolling out a new coalition to counteract what has been an unrelenting and unforgiving lobby by rich folks and corporations to basically have the middle class pay for subsidies to rich people and corporations as they dodge their fair share of our collective tax burden. This has been covered this week in Politico. And I'm here today, again, with Amber Wallen, a leader of the coalition of folks that are fighting for a fairer tax code. You can find out more about this at www.fairshareusa.org. Thank you so much, Amber, for being here. I think this is as important as the voting that's going to go down on November 5th. Welcome to the show. Tell me about the State Revenue Alliance. Why do you do what you do? Why is this so important to everybody in Wisconsin and across these United States?
Well, thanks for having us here. Thanks for having me here, Maggie. It's great to talk to you, You know, at the State Revenue Alliance, we work with groups all across the country on these big tax fights. So State Revenue Alliance is an organization that supports a whole national network of state organizers, policy groups, community-based organizations, and labor groups that are really pushing for a better, more fair, more equitable tax code in their states and across the nation that really better supports the programs and services that matter most to our families and communities. So we work with over 200 state-based groups across nearly 40 states that are pushing to ensure that their communities have the resources that they need to really thrive and to create multi-generational opportunity for their kids and families. And so there's a lot happening across the states, but what we're doing this week in Washington, D.C. is kicking off a new effort that is really focused on the upcoming federal fights, the upcoming federal tax fights that you outlined, that will really become a moratorium across the country about what do we prioritize in the tax code? Who do we prioritize? Who do we really want to ensure has opportunities to thrive and to succeed?
It's the brass tacks of this, Amber, are pretty simple. And I'm going to give a go at it, and then I want you to correct what I get wrong. And then I want to, let's drill down a little bit on what both Fair Share America and the State Revenue Alliance specifically is asking for in our tax code. As I understand things, based on these everyday segments of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, what we've got now, especially after the Trump tax cuts of 2017 that went into effect in 2018, is we have millionaires and billionaires. And I'm not talking about people that have $2 million in an IRA or their 401k. I'm talking about people with $30 million or more of net worth and billion, like the richest, the top of the top, and the most profitable corporations effectively have argued that they should be taxed less and that the middle class should bear the brunt of the burden to fund government. And the end result of this, if this kind of tax policy continues, is two things. The rich will get richer faster than we've ever seen before in our country's history and maybe even the world. And secondly, government will become so underfunded that the things that every single person in the middle class relies upon, like clean air, clean water, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, will eventually, the systems that provide that protection to every single middle class family, that keep ourselves healthy, that help us have opportunities, that we are successful together, those programs will by necessity end up being gutted, leaving the middle class floundering and creating a classified society in America that we haven't seen since the Gilded Age. Am I getting that basically right?
You're getting it exactly right. You know, what we've seen is that for too long, the federal tax code, tax codes across all of the states, have really greatly favored the wealthy, the well-connected, the biggest businesses. And so year after year, historically, the biggest breaks went to all of those groups. And the result, as you said it really well, is that the taxes that we have are unfair, not only across income groups, but they also are exacerbating racial injustice, gender injustice, and they don't provide the revenues that our country needs for the programs that really matter most to families and to communities. And so, you know, you often might see where different groups that are focused on different issue areas are going to Congress or going to their state legislatures and pushing for, maybe it's a better housing program, maybe it's universal child care, maybe it's better funding for our communities, for our community schools, for our classrooms. But the backbone of all of that is the tax revenues. And do we have the revenue to support all of those programs? And for too long, advocates and community members and folks who are on the front lines of needing those programs and services are turned away with that, you know, that phrase, well, how are we going to pay for that? We don't have enough to pay for it. But the reality is we do. If big corporations, if the wealthiest and well-connected among us, if they are paying their fair share and they're paying what they owe, then we can build those communities that our families deserve and that we can envision. And really what's happening now is we're up against a very big fight on the federal, in the federal tax fight, because that will determine multi-generational resources for communities all across the country. And that will be the point where we can say, you know, do communities have what they need to thrive? Do our children have what they need to succeed? Are billionaires paying their fair share? Are multinational corporations paying their fair share? And so that's what we're here in DC to start talking about.
And Amber, you put it so well, and I think this point gets missed. Because I'll talk to people that'll say, my number one issue area is access to healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. My number one issue is the environment and protecting our natural resources. My issue is infrastructure improvements, protecting our electrical grid, housing. We need more equitable housing, investments to ensure affordable housing. We need prescription drug prices lowered. We need to secure our borders. I don't care what your issue is. If we do not figure out how to make the wealthy and the most profitable corporations pay their fair share, I don't care what your issue area is, it won't happen. And we are being forced into a position of false choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is so sickening to me that, we can't do the things that we know are right, that help everyone in the middle class, regardless of party, race, gender, whatever, because there's just not enough. That is a false choice, right?
That's exactly it. It's a completely false choice. And I just appreciate what you lifted up. You know, healthcare policy is tax policy. Childcare policy is tax policy. Climate policy is tax policy. And so advocates around the nation, communities across the nation, whatever that top issue is, tax is an element of it. Tax is that structure that helps provide the revenues that we need. It helps determine whether or not families have opportunity in their everyday life to afford the basic necessities that they need. It helps determine whether or not state governments are able to uphold the programs that people depend on most. And so we think it's really critical that taxes is expanded into all different areas of interest. You know, I've worked on a lot of different issues over the years, and I think tax tends to be the one that folks maybe feel intimidated by, that they feel like, oh, maybe they don't have that information, or it gets super wonky, and I get that. It is a wonky area, but the truth is families know what their families need, right? Advocates know what their states need. Community members know what their communities need. And so I think that's part of the work that we do in helping connect regular folks to these, what can feel like really big, what are really big tax debates, but help that connect to their everyday lives because they know this. They are experts in this type of policy because they are the experts about what their communities and their families need. They're the experts in knowing that they are not necessarily being treated fairly in these tax systems. Normally, they know, folks understand that yes! big corporations and the wealthy are getting the biggest breaks. Folks know that. And they know what we need. And so we think it's really important that their voices are heard in these federal debates.
And Amber, this is the common thread. And the fact that the wool has been pulled over many of our eyes to convince people that the interests of a middle-class worker that punches a clock at a factory are different than a middle-class worker that goes and is a server, that those interests are different. They're not. That a Black family's interests growing up in Milwaukee are different than the interests of a middle-class white family in Rhinelander in the state of Wisconsin, that those are different interests. They're not. Environmental policy is tax policy. Border policy is tax policy. We're going to talk about, and we've been trying to break down and make it accessible for people. When we come back with my special guest this half hour, Amber Wallen, Executive Director of the State Revenue Alliance, one of the voices joining the middle class fight for fair taxation in the Fair Share America campaign. We're going to be joined by Amber. We're going to talk about the three or four basic, simple, understandable changes to the tax code that will serve every single family in the middle class, regardless of party, regardless of voting record, race, gender, or what church, synagogue, mosque, or non-denominational group you get together with on the weekends to pray to a God or no God at all. It is all to our benefit to have a fair tax code. Amber's going to help us break that down more. When we come back after these brief messages, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening, as is always the case in the 3 o'clock hour, to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Keep it locked. I guarantee you, this will be the most important thing you hear all week.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch.
Hey y'all, you work 9 to 5, you work 8 to 6, maybe 7 to 7, you feel like you're getting screwed? We're gonna tell you why. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the 3 o'clock hour, and so it is today's segment of Maggie and the Millionaires. Really humbled and privileged to be joined by Amber Wallen, Executive Director of the State Revenue Alliance. She is part of the fight to save America. That's my language. And that fight means a fair tax code. The movement starts today. Amber, again, thank you for being here. There are some basic changes to the tax code that the Fair Share America Coalition is advocating for and asking lawmakers to take a look at. What are a few of those basic changes to the tax code?
Yeah, well, I think the big things to keep in mind are whether or not the rich, the wealthiest, the most well-connected individuals are paying their fair share, and whether or not big corporations are paying their fair share. And so those are the two biggest things that we're talking about this week. And then we'll be talking about all the way through next year and the years beyond, but making sure that the rich and the corporations pay their fair share. And so raising the corporate tax rate, raising taxes on the wealthy individuals and really high income households, those are the biggest things. And then generating revenue to put that revenue back into our families, back into our communities. So using those revenues to really finance targeted investments in families and workers, things like childcare education, transit, housing, all of those things that we know are key for our communities and that we also know grow our economies and improve everyone's opportunities to thrive as well.
One of the things that I want to touch on, and then I want to just talk about a couple of the specific changes. Folks, when middle-class families like yours and mine and Amber's, when we feel like we're being treated fairly, like we're doing better, we spend money. When we spend money, that fuels our economy as a whole. And guess what? Corporations and shareholders do well. Small businesses do well. But we as the middle class have to feel like we've got something in our pocket. And if you are a disaffected person and you're thinking, I'm voting for Donald Trump because he understands, he is a billionaire who has a golden toilet. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't understand you. And the tax cuts for billionaires and corporations that he wants to increase will only hurt your family. Here are the you mentioned raising the corporate tax rate. Donald Trump slashed it to one of the lowest rates that we've seen in modern American history. We're also talking about a very simple concept of taxing investment gains, a dollar earned by investing your money, just like the dollar that's earned from work. The technical terms are tax capital gains like ordinary income. That's two things. We want to raise the income tax on the wealthiest households, those that are making over $400,000 a year. That's the third thing. The fourth thing, we need to tax stock buybacks, which are just cash grabs that deprive businesses of investing in research and development, from investing in workers. We want to tax those stock buybacks. There's other loopholes that we've talked about on those shows, but those basic things, a higher corporate tax rate, equating capital gains and income tax, and finally, again, raising income tax on the richest households and taxing stock buybacks, those four things would make a generational change in our government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think something that you lifted up that I'd build off is, you know, that idea about who's looking out for us and who has looked out for us. And so, you know, what we're talking about next year is that the Trump tax cuts of 2017 will be expiring. And so that's where this, you know, this big discussion is happening around that. And you lifted up some of the things that we want to see. And I might just step back even just for a minute and talk about why we're listing those things out and why those things are on the table. And it's because in 2017, you know, Trump led the passage of this big tax bill that did a few things. Of course, it was very expensive. And so it
just ask Nikki Haley, right? She put $8 trillion of an increase in the federal deficit on Donald Trump's tax cut shoulders.
It was huge. And so it impacted our ability to provide essential programs for our communities and for our families. And then the other thing is it skewed so heavily to the wealthy, to wealthy individuals. So just as an example, you know, the top 1% of earners saw about a $60,000 per year tax cut. Folks who make less than $100,000 saw between $70 and $900. So just think about that. $60,000 for the top 1%. And then 70 to a few hundred for regular folks across the country. And that's just on the personal income tax side. If you look at the corporate side, you know, again, what we were promised, what American workers were promised was, you know, if we give these cuts to corporations, then that'll pay off for the workers. And of course, we know that trickle-down economics is deeply flawed and debunked policy. And so, of course, that didn't work. Those tax cuts did not trickle down. What we saw was that millionaire executives making a million or more a year saw about a $50,000 tax cut from the corporate side of the Trump tax cuts, but that the bottom 90% of workers saw nothing. And so that's kind of the recent history that we're working on and why we think that the expiration of that tax law is such an essential time, such a crucial time to really ensure that those who can afford it pay what they owe to the benefit of the vast majority of American workers and families, and that those folks are finally prioritized in tax policy making the way that they should be.
And we see this show up, Amber, when we look at effective tax rates that billionaires pay versus ordinary Americans. Billionaires paying effective tax rates in the single digits, while working Americans pay tax rates upwards of 30%. There is no universe that I can imagine where anyone, when confronted with those facts, would go, yeah, that sounds like a system that's working just peachy. When you talk to legislators, elected officials about this, and you say you want to tax millionaires, billionaires, and the wealthiest, most profitable corporations more, what's their reaction?
Well, I think that folks, something that's important is that what we're seeing when regular state constituents and state advocates go and they talk with their federal elected policymakers is that there is some receptivity to that, because while congressional lawmakers may be used to seeing an army of corporate suited lobbyists lobbying them on taxes, they are less used to seeing their own constituents in Washington, D.C. or in district meetings asking them, really demanding that they put the interests of families in their district and kids in their district first in tax policy. And so I think that that's something to lift up, is who the messenger is really key. And just like the work that the patriotic millionaires do, you know, that's essential to have folks out there on the front lines who know that they may be paying a higher tax rate, but they want to see that so that all of our communities can thrive.
We all matter in this fight. How can people help out?
Well, I think the best thing to do is go to the SRA website, staterevenuealliance.org, or fairshareusa.org, and get connected to the groups that are there, get connected to the groups on the ground, or get connected with all of us. And
we got to leave it there. So sorry, that is Amber Whalen. She is the executive director of the State Revenue Alliance. Get dialing, get involved. It's fairshareusa.org. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn.
Chained our hearts in vain, we jumped, never asking why. We kissed, I fell under your spell of love no one could deny. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you. I can't live a lie, running for my life. I will always want you.
This guy, he comes in like a wrecking ball. And that's why he's here with us.
I picked my song.
Yes! I'm Maggie Dawn, everybody. Welcome, Wisconsin. Welcome back if you're joining us again. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited to be joined by my partner in broadcasting, the wrecking ball of wrecking balls, Dom Salvia, who has a show that comes right after mine. Every day of the week from 4 to 6 p.m., the Dom Salvia Show. Hey, Dom, how you doing today?
Hey, Maggie, I'm great. How you doing? All right,
There we go.
Yes, there I am. Wrecking ball, come on. I'm a little guy. I can't be that much of a wrecking ball.
Your words, brother, your words.
Yeah, okay, I'll take it.
Just a little piece of business, everybody. Had some really great texters and commenters today talking about my segment on Tyreek Hill. I will revisit and respond to your thoughts. People asking me to lean a little bit more into that, the complexities of that interaction. We'll do that tomorrow, so tune back on into the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep your thoughts coming. Even when we end segments, I still want to hear from you. If it touches a chord, we will come back to that topic. You can always text or call us, and Dom and I certainly invite those texts and calls this segment, 855-752-4842. Dom, I really wanted you to join me today because I intentionally did not talk about the lurker in the golf course bushes yesterday.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, I wanted to see what Donald Trump and J.D. Vance would say about it. And they've said quite a bit.
Yeah, send your money. A fundraising email solicitation went out a couple hours afterwards. I think to the max of like $3,200.
Max out. More than that, I guess I should not be surprised at all by effectively J.D. Vance and Donald Trump blaming Democrats who criticize the former MAGA president for his unserious, inappropriate, un-American, undemocratic daily attacks on human beings. That his rhetoric that tries to divide us, say these people are worthy, these people aren't, that none of that is possibly responsible for uptick in political violence. That it's the Democrats who criticize that rhetoric. I want to take a listen to a couple of the things that J.D. Vance said. Just top of the hour, folks, if you want to get on this conversation, we're going to talk about the lurker in the golf course bushes. We're going to talk about what this means. What was your reaction? I'm going to share my thoughts that I had on Sunday. Dom will share his, and we always want to hear from each of you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Are Democrats responsible for the lurker in the golf course bushes? That's a question.
No! No!
That's an answer. But let's take a listen to what J.D. Vance has had to say. We're going to just run both of the clips, if you don't mind, Jeff.
I promise I will do my part to tone down the rhetoric, but in particular, the people telling you that Donald Trump needs to be eliminated, you guys need to cut it out or you're going to get somebody hurt. No one has tried to kill Kamala Harris in the last couple of months, and two people now have tried to kill Donald Trump in the last couple of months. I'd say that's pretty strong evidence that the left needs to tone down the rhetoric and needs to cut this crap out.
What?
Somebody's going to get hurt by it.
Wow.
First of all, political violence is wrong. Political violence is the stuff of autocrats and fascists and coup d'etats. Political violence is antithetical to democracies. It has no place. I firmly condemn the lurker in the bushes. It wasn't an assassination attempt. There was a lurker in the bushes that was spotted, shot at, and arrested. He didn't take a shot at the president, the former president. This wasn't the equivalent to what happened in Pennsylvania.
A few steps away, but definitely not the same thing.
Yes, and certainly yet another failure of the Secret Service. Full stop.
The fact that according to J.D. Vance, that the current vice president hasn't had an attempt on her life, and the former guy has, is somehow an indication. Is that correlation or causation? I'm not sure what J.D. Vance is actually saying here. To my understanding, the first attempt, the young man who was shot and killed by the Secret Service after taking a couple of shots at Trump and killing some of his rally goers, that was a crime of opportunity. My understanding, the guy was just looking to do some mass murder. That's my understanding.
Yes.
This last guy, apparently, to my understanding from the reporting, voted for Trump in 16, had a falling out because of Trump's, Ukraine policy? I guess certainly no reason to go take shots or even threaten to assassinate a former president. But none of those things seem to me to be indicative of anything that Kamala Harris or Joe Biden has said or done. And the word eliminate by J.D. Vance, I think, is, I've never heard that term uttered by anybody. We need to eliminate Donald Trump. That's not what I've heard anybody say ever.
We need to beat his butt in the voting booth.
Yes.
That is the line from Democrats. Let's crush this guy in the election.
If calling someone out as a threat to democracy based on his previous action, based on his effort to overthrow the last election, based on the soft coup of the fraudulent electors, based on telling the people to come down, it'll be wild, based on him sitting on his ass for 3 hours while his supporters attacked the Capitol to specifically and forcefully and purposefully stop the peaceful transfer of power. He still has not answered to that yet.
No, he still denies any responsibility. Calling Donald Trump an unserious man trying to have the most serious job on the planet, saying that Donald Trump does not support democracy, is not an incitement to violence. It's an observation of fact. Let's refresh. Donald Trump has called immigrants vermin and animals who live in nests, who poison the blood of the country. He claims a bloodbath will occur if he's not elected. He refuses to acknowledge the results of the 2020 election. He calls his critics scum and traitors, enemies of the people. He's now accusing his opponents, his political opponents, like Dom and I, of highly inflammatory language, and blames Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for a second lurker in the bushes. He's raising money off of it. This is what he said. The gunman believed the rhetoric of Biden and Harris and he acted on it. There is not a shred of proof that that is true. He continued, quote, their rhetoric is causing me to be shot at when I am the one who is going to save the country and they are the ones that are destroying the country.
I mean, just right in the very same sentence, he's accusing the left of this violent rhetoric. If that's the case, then he ends his statement with the same thing that he's claiming the Dems are causing him to be shot at.
And then this, Vance went on to say this, we cannot tell the American people that one candidate is a fascist. Oh, wait, did Donald Trump say that Kamala Harris is a Marxist, communist, fascist, socialist 3 days ago? Yeah, he did. This is gaslighting. I've said this for years now. Donald Trump and the MAGA cult are engaging in the gaslighting of America. We can do better. This is not someone who believes in democracy, and J.D. Vance is just his little lapdog that will say whatever works for Donald Trump in the moment. After the shooting in Pennsylvania, that was an actual assassination attempt. Then it was all about, well, let's be calm, because he thought he had it in the bag and it would work for him.
For a minute, right.
Now he's going to blame Kamala and Joe. That's ridiculous. How can it be that Joe and Kamala are responsible for this action of one indisputably lunatic guy, and Donald Trump, who got up on the stairs of the outside of the Capitol on January 6th and said, like, march on over there, and he is not responsible for that? It just, like, that is the very definition of insanity.
If a presidential candidate, if Donald Trump lost the election, now, Joe Biden is now the president. In the debate, it was brought up several times, several quotes that the former president said running up to that debate. And the last one being, we lost by a whisker, right? So we have a candidate who
damn well knows he lost.
Election, yes. Knows he lost. Now he says he was being sarcastic. But is that a threat to democracy? I mean, how many different levels of threat to democracy do there have to be before I can come out here and say, yes, this man is a threat to democracy? I'm not saying that anybody should take a shot. Absolutely not. We are unequivocal in this. Political
condemn
violence,
that.
Any kind
yes.
of violence ever, it's not okay. Self-defense excluded. This is why we are supposed to have self-governance. This is why people need to be engaged. This is why people need to be informed. The language coming out of the former president and J.D. Vance are exactly the same things. Accusing the Democrats of doing what they are doing, as you articulated in those quotes.
This is Donald Trump on Truth Social. He said this yesterday. Because of this communist left rhetoric, the bullets are flying, and it will only get worse. Allowing millions of people from places unknown to invade and take over our country. All of this is a lie, by the way. We do not have open borders.
There's not an invasion.
Right. Is an unpardonable sin. Our borders must be closed. By the way, they are. Does that mean that you still have people crossing it legally? Of course you do. Ask any country or foreign leader. That happens. Our borders must be closed and the terrorists, criminals, and mentally insane immediately removed from American cities and towns, deported back to their countries of origin. I have this to say to the MAGA president. You are a convicted criminal, you are mentally insane, and you are creating domestic terrorists in this country every day.
33 bomb threats to Ohio.
And he doesn't care about it. Because of your lies about Haitian legal residents in a city in Ohio, there are bomb threats. Police officers had to go to 17 schools. 17. And the people that are phoning in those bomb threats are basing it off the president's rhetoric. I say to the president, you are inciting domestic terrorism. You are a convicted criminal. You are mentally insane. If you think immigrants that fit those categories need to be removed from American cities and towns, sir, I say this, you are not fit to serve. You should be removed and never allowed to enter the Oval Office. Not removed from the planet, not removed from the country, but removed from any more of our political discourse. You are a destructive force. You are an unserious man for the most serious job on the planet. Matt from Middleton, what do you have to say this afternoon?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to bring up that the far right always uses immigration. Putin's been pushing migrants, kind of like Governor Abbott in Texas did to New York. You know, they do it in Europe. They're pushing migrants to borders to try to boost the far right. It's a tool. It's a play. But the point I want to make is that America runs on cheap, borderline slave labor. We learned that in the pandemic with the meatpacking plants and these people who are in terrible conditions, usually foreigners brought here for the work. And the same with Springfield. They bring people with work because they need the workers. They're excellent workers. They like having them, but it creates this chaos. And what I'm afraid of is that we're always going to be stuck in this situation because the country needs the labor. The capitalists and the conservatives that own these industries will always be bringing them in, yet complaining about immigrants to get political.
Right.
Are we always going to be in this situation where we're fighting each other because we need the labor, but we don't like having them here?
No, and I think that there is a pathway forward, Matt, and that is actual elected leaders that want to get something done, to have an immigration system that works, that observes the constitutional and democratic values that every single one of us hold dear, no matter what letter we put behind our name, no matter what party we tend to vote for. That is the pathway forward. Accountability of our elected officials, and it begins on November 5th by ensuring that this mentally insane, convicted criminal who foments domestic terrorism is removed from the Oval Office, never to see the light of that office again. It starts there. Folks, we'll take your comments when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. The phone and text lines are open.
Lost by a whisker.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the lurker in the bushes that was a threat to the former MAGA president's life this past Sunday, and what Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have had to say about it. Here is the bottom line to me. In a democracy, we can do two things at the same time. We can criticize the policies and political positions of our opponents. We can do so legally and peacefully. We can even use big words and big language. And we can simultaneously condemn and prosecute violent criminal activity. Donald Trump does neither of those things. Okay? Not either of them. He condemns anyone who speaks against him as criminal. And he says that anyone who does anything in support of him, whether it's illegal or not, whether it's violent or not, totally legitimate. The difference is not actually the rule of law. The difference is whether or not it works to increase Donald Trump's power. If you increase his power, you're legitimate, whether what you're doing is criminal or violent. If you oppose him, you're illegal, you're a criminal, and you need to be dispensed with by any means necessary. That is the meaning of everything that Donald Trump says every day. That is not democracy. And it's not democracy if you call yourself a Republican, a conservative, or a Democrat, or an independent, or a Green Party person, or a whatever. The impulse that Donald Trump has to stop political opponents or to stop people from accurately describing
right.
what he's doing is the threat to democracy. He is an unserious man trying to get the most serious job on the planet, and he is doing so by posing a serious threat to each and every single one of us.
He's not running for the presidency. He's running to stay at a prison. Of course, yes. It's about Donald Trump. It's not about service to the country or upholding the Constitution. It's about saving Donald Trump's ass. And thankfully, nothing happened in this last quote-unquote attempt, the lurker attempt. So maybe we could just get past all the thoughts and prayers and go right to how did a felon get a firearm? Want to have those conversations?
Let's talk about that.
Now we have the time. No one got hurt. Let's do that now. No, now is the time. Now is the time. Has any Republican brought it up?
No.
How did a felon get a hold of a semi-automatic weapon?
And here's the other thing. Not only is his approach making it impossible for us to have the real policy discussions. How do we protect our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which rely on safety and reasonable gun regulations? We're not talking about that. We're talking about this garbage. And the difference between Dom and I and others who dare to criticize Donald Trump is that the things that we say are true. The things that J.D. Vance and Donald Trump say are not. That matters. Trump did really mount a violent coup. He really did try to subvert and interrupt the peaceful transition of power. He did, his family members did accept bribes while they were working in the White House. He was helped into power by Russian espionage activity. And oh yes, we're going to listen to J.D. Vance admit that he did actually make up stuff for political advantage. Let's listen to J.D. Vance admit that very thing.
The American media totally ignored this stuff until Donald Trump and I started talking about cat memes. If I have to,
create stories so that
the American media actually pays attention to the suffering of the American people, then that's what I'm going to do, Dana, because you guys are completely letting Kamala Harris coast.
We don't need to listen to anymore. He just, the candidate for the vice presidency of the United States says, if I need to lie to serve my political ends, I'm going to go ahead and do so. That's what we're dealing with. Annie from Watertown, what do you have to say?
So what did he do wrong? He's got a great defense. He was maybe there to protect the president, huh? Okay, he had a little gun. He's a felon, but really, everybody's allowed to have a gun, and he didn't shoot at him. So, what's the problem?
No harm, no foul, I guess.
Right, everybody gets a gun. We don't care about any of those red flag laws.
It's Florida.
Yeah, it's Florida. Thanks so much, Annie from Watertown. Catherine from Madison, what do you have to say?
Hi, guys. I got a quick question. Vance admitted that they're lying about this stuff in Springfield. So can't somebody bring a lawsuit against that for libel and a cease and desist or something? That's a legal question. I'm just wondering.
So I'll tell you the answer to this, Catherine. I was an assistant city attorney for the city of Milwaukee. I was Milwaukee County's chief corporation counsel. If I was the legal advisor to the chief executive officers, the mayor or the county executive, that has Springfield, Ohio in its jurisdiction, I would be talking to the chief legal officer of my jurisdiction and saying, we're spending tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars to defend our schools, to investigate these bomb threats. Let's go sue Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. I would be all over it. Let's go see the rule of law in action. Thank you, Catherine. Kenbaum from Dailyville, what do you have to say?
I'm a complete opponent of Donald Trump, but I am terrified that he might come to harm, because I think the only chance MAGA has to get J.D. Vance into the White House is if he rides on the back of a Donald Trump martyrdom. So we got to make sure he's safe.
I could not agree with you more,
yes.
Ken. I sent a text message to a number of my conservative friends when I saw the news alert. I condemned the lurker in the bushes. I said, the Secret Service, and if I was Joe Biden and if I was Kamala Harris, I would be unequivocal. Dear acting director of Secret Service, your job, forget me. Make sure this guy is safe. Spare no expense. I want Donald Trump alive and well on November 5th. And until his terrible health and obesity takes him off the planet, I want him healthy and protected maximally by the Secret Service.
Absolutely. I totally agree. No harm should come to this man. He has to stand trial next year.
Yeah, no kidding. just a little, in case you forgot this, what just happened is not unprecedented. Gerald Ford had two assassination attempts inside of 3 weeks. But he didn't blame his opponents for those attempts on his life. He didn't blame America or the courts or immigrants or anybody else.
The media? The rhetoric?
Nope, didn't do that.
No.
We deserve better, America. We deserve better, Wisconsin. And I'll give you better. You got the Dom Salvia Show coming up next. He's my friend and yours. It's been a pleasure. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, because it is always better when we stand together.